You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join me on Wednesdays to get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. The New York Mets were lucky to salvage a series split against the St. Louis Cardinals on Thursday. Definitely not their best series, but they must be happy to go home with the 4-3 road trip. What I want to do today in the first segment is talk about that game and really talk about Taijuan Walker and his brilliant start. Then in the final two segments, you will hear our crossover podcast with Millard Thomas, host of Locked On Diamondbacks. We talk a lot about the Mets and a little bit about the Diamondbacks in that conversation. Looking forward to playing that for all of you. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Also, make sure you follow the show at Locked On Mets, where you can enter for a chance to win some of the giveaways that we do. I'll have another one in a week or so, but the one we ran this week, the signed photo of Michael Conforto, the winner is Ariel Suarez. Handle is asuarez99. I'll make sure to reach out to you and get you that photo of Michael Conforto. Now, to talk about this game on Thursday, it was really a brutal game to watch. The Mets drew 11 walks. They had 9 hits, yet they only managed to score 4 runs, 3 of which came on bases-loaded walks. The Cardinals quite literally gave this game to the Mets when it came to that side. Just terrible pitching. Dominic Smith was the only Met to get an RBI hit in this game. The Mets were 3-for-15 with runners in scoring position, and they left 17 runners on base. Definitely not the game that you want to see that would tell you that this team has turned it around offensively, but at least they got the win, and they got the win because Taijuan Walker was brilliant. He struck out the side in the first inning, then in the second inning, he gave up a leadoff single to Nolan Arenado. That was it. He was essentially perfect other than that base hit. A run did come across that inning as Arenado scored, but that was because Jonathan Villar made a throwing error on a ground ball as he was trying to get Arenado out at second. That put runners at first and third. Ultimately, Walker gave up a sacrifice fly, but that was really all the Cardinals could muster. He was just outstanding, had 8 strikeouts on the day, retired the final 18 batters he faced. And again, really just that single is the only thing he gave up away from being, you know, perfect through 7 innings. The Cardinals couldn't touch him, and his fastball velocity was back up. It averaged out at 94.5 miles per hour in this start. He touched 96.6 miles per hour, and what was really impressive about his max velocity pitch is it came on his 80th pitch of the day. We saw Walker deal with all the adversity of watching your team not score time and again. Then there was even a rain delay in the middle of that game for 16 minutes, came back out, continued to pitch well. His stuff was great start to finish. Needed only 92 pitches to get through those 7 innings. He threw 62 strikes of those 92 pitches. So there's nothing else to say except that Taijuan Walker was brilliant. Best start he's had in a Mets uniform. And there's been a couple now. He has really surprised me. I knew that he was going to be a solid starting pitcher. I thought, look, if he is your number 4 starter, you have a great rotation, but he has stepped in to be the number 3 with Carrasco's injury, and he is pitching even better than that. He's pitching like a number 2 even. I mean, he has been outstanding. That top 3 of DeGrom, Stroman, and Walker has been just as good as any top three in a rotation in baseball. And the idea is eventually you could get Carrasco back, Syndergaard back, if all of them are healthy. That's the best rotation in baseball, quite frankly. The Mets are close to having the best rotation in baseball without those guys. Now, since I mentioned Carrasco, I should note that he was moved to the 60-day IL on Thursday. Going to be back at the end of May now, basically. And I think we do talk about this, me and Miller did on the crossover. But essentially, he just couldn't field his position yet. That is probably the reason why they are pushing him back. He just didn't progress enough. They didn't want to call it a setback, but they want to be patient and make sure that when he comes back, he'll be good for the remainder of the season. Now, when it comes to the bullpen in this game, Trevor May was great in his inning, had two strikeouts and a perfect eighth, and Edwin Diaz got his fourth save of the year, although he gave up a pair of hits and probably made Mets fans really nervous. He got the job done, though, and the Mets won 4-1. Now, over the weekend, the Mets will be playing the Arizona Diamondbacks at home. And to break down that series, again, I talked to Miller Thomas of Locked On Diamondbacks. I will play that conversation for you in just a minute. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Football's been over, but the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. With real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine, BetOnline has you covered. For all the news, scores, and odds, it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, D-backs fans, back on the pod once again. We got Ryan Finkelstein of Locked On Mets. Ryan, say what's up to the people. It's been a minute.
How are things going? You guys are almost 500. Good year so far, right?
Yeah, well, the D-backs just lost today, so now they're a game below 500. But hey, that's okay, because if they were in the NL East, they would actually be second in that division. And before the sweep of the Marlins, they would have been first in the NL East despite being fourth in their own division. So that's actually where I want to start this conversation, because what is going on with that division, Ryan? I was talking about this with Aram Layton, because the Marlins, they're the only team with a positive run differential in that division. And before this series against the D-backs, they were in last place with the only positive run differential in that division. So I want to hear your perspective on it. What's going on with that division? Why are so many of those teams like at or below 500 with a negative run differential?
You know, every year we do this. This is my third year on the network where we all talk, you know, the NL East hosts, and we're all hyped about the season, how great these teams are going to be. Is it the best division in baseball? And then all of these teams show up flat each year. So I feel like it might just be that East Coast bias, you know, these big media markets that hype up teams like the Mets and the Phillies. But, you know, just specifically looking at what I've seen watching some of these head-to-head games, it's not a lot of great offense right now. That's been a big thing. I think, you know, each team has their own set of circumstances why they're struggling. For the Mets, it's just been no power at all. And, you know, that's why they just fired their hitting coaches. But, you know, they haven't had any power. They haven't hit with runners in scoring position. And if you're not hitting home runs and you're not hitting with runners in scoring position, you're probably not scoring a lot of runs. And that's what's been going on for the Mets.
Yeah, speaking of you guys firing your coaches, I saw Manny Ramirez. He's throwing out some feelers of trying to become the Mets' next hitting coach. How do you feel about that?
I thought he was looking to play, to be honest with you. I mean,
with Manny Ramirez, he's ready to play. It doesn't matter if he's 50, 60. That dude is always ready to strap on some cleats, honestly.
I think he was saying, look, I can come up with a runner on second and nobody out and get you an RBI. I think that's what Manny was saying, if I had to read between the lines there.
Yeah, the universal DH was still in effect, hey, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be afraid to give Manny a shot. That dude is still going to be smashing bombs. I mean, I think he played pretty recently. It wasn't in the major league, of course, but I'm pretty sure he was in some independent league as recently as last year, even though he's like 55 years old. So Manny Ramirez, he's always going to be Manny being Manny. But you talked about the Mets offense. It's right now, looking at the NL stats, the Mets are dead last in runs scored. You mentioned home runs. Why can't they put runs on the board? It seems specifically when DeGrom's on the mound, it seems like the offense really disappears. And this just seems like to be a problem with the Mets the last couple years. Their offense really not clicking, even though they have some pretty good guys, I feel like, in their lineup with Lindor, Pete Alonso. I like Dominic Smith, even though he doesn't play every day. So why is there such an inability to score runs from the Mets?
Yeah, I think right now it's so hard to pinpoint. I mean, you know, if I could figure it out, I'm sure they could, but you just have so many guys who've gotten off to a slow start, Lindor being one, Dominic Smith is another one. He's playing out in left field. And the reason why you're squeezing his bat in the lineup is because, or the reason why you're putting his glove out in left field, I guess I should say, his inability to play left is because you expect him to be a big RBI guy, and that's not happening. So there's just a lot of guys who got off to a really rough start. For a while, the excuse was the Mets had such an inconsistent schedule where they had so many. First off, their first series, you had the Nationals have a COVID outbreak. So that pushed their season back. Then you had rainouts, a snow out. So that was kind of the excuse for a while. But now I think the excuses had to kind of go away and they had to figure some things out. I think we've seen some signs of them turning a corner. And there is some guys like Pete Alonso and Jeff McNeil and Michael Conforto who have really started to come together. But really, they're looking at Lindor right now, James McCann. They're two big offseason acquisitions that just have given them nothing offensively.
Yeah, and I've seen some discussion about maybe dropping him in the lineup until he figures out his, you know, his struggles. We've seen that a lot in baseball. Sometimes these big-time free agents – team sign them, then they struggle start the season. You have to drop them down to that seventh spot. So how would you feel if the Mets did that, where they were putting Lindor in that maybe seventh hole or eighth hole for a little bit in the lineup?
I think he's going to turn it around, and I don't think they will do that, because I think that they are right now trying to continue to pump him with confidence, and I don't think that they really do want to drop him all the way down that low. But once they get some of their guys back from injury, if he's still struggling, then maybe you can see a change. You know, I don't see you batting Jonathan VR and, you know, Kevin Pillar ahead of Lindor. But when Nimmo comes back, when Davis comes back and he's still struggling, maybe that's something they would do.
Yeah, and one guy who is injured right now is the ace, you know, the fan favorite, the franchise star, Jacob DeGrom. And talking off air before we got on here, I thought the D-backs were going to get a chance to, you know, miss the next DeGrom start, not see him in this series, but it sounds like he actually might be back this weekend. What can you tell me about Jacob DeGrom and his status right now?
So he played catch yesterday or today, actually. Tomorrow, I think, or on Friday, he's going to be throwing a bullpen, and the idea would be that he could then go on Sunday. So I don't believe your D-backs are going to miss him. There is a chance that they'll be cautious, and maybe you'll get lucky and they'll push him back to Monday. But right now, I think the way it's going to slate out, it should be David Peterson on Friday, likely Joe Lucchese on Saturday, and then DeGrom on Sunday.
Now, I want to test your Jacob DeGrom love, because I got a few comparisons, a few questions here for you about Jacob DeGrom. And the first one I want to know is, do you believe he's the best player in New York? You got Lindor on the Mets. You got Judge and Stan, Gerrit Cole on the Yankees. Do you believe Jacob DeGrom is the best player in New York?
Absolutely. I could not host Locked On Mets and answer anything different to that question. What do you think I'm going to say? Come on. The fans know I have to say Jacob DeGrom is the best player in New York. And if you look at what he's done since 2018, it's pretty easy to make that argument.
Well, then I'm going to ask you a question that might, you know, mess with your emotions a little bit, because I want to know, can he go down as the best Mets pitcher ever? Honestly, if you had to take Jacob DeGrom out of it, who would you say is the best Mets pitcher to ever don a Mets uniform?
It's obviously the franchise, Tom Seaver. And I think this conversation, it's very similar to, you know, when you're talking basketball, and there's the people who will never say that Michael Jordan's not the GOAT. Like, it's one of those things where who you watch is who you're going to lean towards. So being someone who never saw Tom Seaver, I can start to stack up the careers and say, you know, Jacob deGrom has a chance to be that guy that is the best ever. I think what might be the great separator in that debate is if deGrom finishes his career with the Mets, because the Mets did trade Tom Seaver. So I think if deGrom spent his entire career with the Mets and stayed on this level for four or five more seasons, I think that he's going to have a pretty good case to be the best Mets starter ever.
Yeah, I'm looking at Tom Seaver's baseball reference right now. He played 12 years with the Mets, but he played 10 years outside of the Mets organization. Wow, too. Yeah, because he played until he was 41 years old. This dude was in baseball for a long time. So, yeah, I can't really argue against that. I think that's a big case. And do you think DeGrom will be a Met for life? I know he has a contract going till age 36. So I'm not sure if he'd be ready to leave, you know, at that advanced age. But, hey, if it's another 3 years of him going out there absolutely dominating dudes, but stacking up losses because the team can't score not even one run during a game. I mean, do you think DeGrom could eventually leave the Mets if he wants to go see some greener pastures?
I think when it comes to his contract, what you have to look at more is he has an opt-out after next season. And if DeGrom doesn't get hurt, he's going to exercise that opt-out, because why wouldn't he?
Yeah,
but he has talked about that idea of playing with one team for his entire career. It's been interesting because DeGrom, always a very humble guy, never really was one to talk about himself much. But recently, we've seen him kind of make some of his goals public. And he's talked about wanting to be a quote-unquote inner circle Hall of Famer, one of those guys that's really considered one of the greatest to ever do it. And he's talked about wanting to spend his entire career with one organization. So I think that as much as fans probably talk about impending free agents like Noah Syndergaard and Marcus Stroman, I think DeGrom's going to get a huge contract following this season that should take him through the rest of his career.
Yeah, if you just had to guess what that contract would look like, what do you think? Do you think it would be one of those deals where it might be more like a Trevor Bauer short-term deal, maybe a five-year, you know, just a fat contract where it's like $35 million a year? Or do you think they would give him, because he is a little bit older, do you still think they would give him one of those eight-year deals where it's like $300 million? Which way do you think the Mets would lean? Because, hey, new ownership, Steven Cohen, I mean, it doesn't look like they're afraid to spend money anymore.
My projection has been a five-year, $200 million contract where he'd get $40 a year for 5 years. I think that would take him through age 39, if I'm not mistaken, something like that. So I think that would make a lot of sense. And you would see where you go from there. But at least he would get paid as much as Bauer, more than Cole, and for a five-year deal. And he's worth every penny for what he's done over the last couple of years. I will have some more of that conversation with Miller Thomas in just a minute. But I want to tell you about the best tasting protein bars ever, which are Built Bars. There are so many great flavors to choose from. You have your nut flavors, some without nuts. My personal favorite is the cookies and cream bar. But the best thing about all of these Built Bars is they come covered in 100% chocolate. It really is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bars are soft, they're easy to chew, and they're healthy. That's the best part. They are healthy. They come low in calories, low in sugar, but they are high in protein and high in fiber. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
It seems like Noah Syndergaard is expected to come back, you know, maybe mid-May, maybe early June. If that's the case, what is the ceiling of this Mets rotation? And do you think we'll see a fully healthy Syndergaard when he comes back? What kind of workload do you expect from him when we see him again this season?
You know, they're being pretty cautious with Noah. I think right now they're aiming for mid-June. You always wonder, you know, innings limits, all that type of stuff coming off Tommy John. You don't know what they're going to look like. Sometimes it takes a couple of years. I know with Zach Wheeler, that was certainly the case. With Taijuan Walker, that was the case. And now that he's a couple years removed, he seems to be at the top level of what he can be as a starting pitcher. So I'm not so sure what they're going to get out of Noah. I'm actually more looking forward to seeing Carlos Carrasco pitch. He's dealing with that hamstring injury. They actually just today put him on the 60-day IL, so he's not going to be back until May 31st. I guess he just couldn't field his position just yet, even though I think he was throwing like six innings of sim games. But once that rotation is fully realized, it's dynamic. I mean, Taiwan Walker essentially becomes your fifth starter, and he's been outstanding this year. You know, Stroman's been great. Jacob DeGrom's been great. I think they have the ceiling of being the best rotation in baseball because they're close to it without those two guys.
Well, going tomorrow, we got a great matchup. I don't know how great for you, because I know as a D-backs fan, we got Zach Gallen on the hill whenever he's pitching. The D-backs have a great chance of winning, but with David Peterson on the mound, I mean, I don't know too much about the guy. His stats are 4.81 ERA, got 29 strikeouts on the season. Apparently, he's coming off a pretty strong start. So what can you tell me about David Peterson, and what should I expect from him as a D-backs fan?
You know, in his first start this year, he gave up six runs, so that kind of inflated the ERA. He's been really good as of late. He's a guy in the past, or at least in his rookie year in 2020, where he was really good at pitching himself out of jams, but he also pitched himself into jams, a guy who can walk some batters. He's a left-handed pitcher that really – one of the words that manager Luis Ross always says about him is he just says poise. He doesn't come off as a starting pitcher who's still maybe 15 starts into his big league career. He really has that ability to, you know, pitch a bad inning and come back and kind of erase it from his memory. So, you know, David Peterson's a guy that might not go deep into games. He might only give you five innings, but he can really throw a gem. So he's definitely of the starting pitchers that you would face. That's the guy you'd probably want to, as opposed to Stroman, Walker, or DeGrom. But he can win you a game. So I think that's going to be a good matchup.
Yeah, and Zach Gallen on the mound, he's a stud pitcher. What are your odds? What do you put in the chances of the Mets bats coming alive? Because I'm putting your chances right now less than 5% for the Mets bats to come alive tomorrow, because I think Zach Gallen is going to go out there and have one of the best starts of the season, honestly.
You know, it's funny because I think the last crossover I did was with Gabriel Starr of Locked On Red Sox, and I said the Mets are kind of reversed with that, where she was saying, you know, Garrett Richards on the mound tomorrow, you guys are lucky. I'm like, hold on. A bad starting pitcher against the Mets, that usually means the bad starting pitcher is going to have his best game of the season. So I don't look at a great starting pitcher and say the Mets can't hit them. It's a weird thing I do, where if it's a bad starting pitcher, I get worried. So I give the Mets a pretty decent shot. You know, they're kind of due to break out at some point. So maybe it is against Gallen, but I would assume that's the pitcher that you're going to fear most in this series for sure.
Oh, yeah. And hey, Madison Bumgarner, you're lucky. He pitched today. This dude has actually been on fire recently. He went like six innings, allowed one earned run today. He's coming off four straight like quality starts for the D-backs. It's been phenomenal, honestly.
I need to ask you about the no-hitter. I mean, nobody saw that coming. I was messaging Dylan about it from Locked On Braves. I'm like, how did Mad Bum throw a no-hitter in 2021? Nobody saw it coming, but I guess he's finding his stuff again.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how he did it, because Mad Bum is all smoke and mirrors. We all know Mad Bum doesn't have any velocity anymore. He's topping out at 90 nowadays. And really for him, the D-backs, what they've done recently, they said, stop worrying about the scouting report. Stop worrying about advanced analytics. We don't want anything in your head. We just want you to go out there, pitch, and just go with feel. And that's pretty much what he's been doing recently. And now he's on a streak of four straight consecutive starts where he's looked pretty good. So I think he was just overthinking too much, because, I mean, he gets that fat contract. He's the only one on the D-backs making double-digit salary, because the D-backs are pretty cheap and they don't hand out fat contracts. And this is a dude who's making, I think, like 18 this year and then 23 over the next 2 years. So he's got a lot of weight on his shoulder to carry this rotation. And he was expected to be the ace. We signed him from a division rival. It didn't work out in 2020, so he definitely wanted to have a big resurgent season 2021. And the season started off just – like a continuation of 2020 where he looked awful, but now he's turned it around ever since that pseudo no hitter, which, look, I'm gonna be honest, I don't really count as a no hitter, because we've seen countless potential no hitters be, you know, literally wiped away with two outs left in the ninth inning. You know, two strikes, two outs. I mean, remember that Galarraga almost perfect game, the final out? Like, the dude was safe. The dude was out at first, but they called him safe. Like, things like that can happen. It's so easy to lose a no-hitter late in the game. So I don't technically consider it a no-hitter. And if you do want to consider a no-hitter in the record books, I think you should just put an asterisk or something saying it was a doubleheader. But hey, I don't know how Mad Bum is doing it, but he looks good. He looks confident. And right now he's just doing it by mixing his pitches because he's still got a nice little arsenal. He's just not throwing gas anymore. So he's really had to become a real location and finesse pitcher.
For my Mets fans going into this weekend, who do you fear in that D-backs lineup? I know that the last time we talked, you did hype up Carson Kelly. I just want to give you some props on that, because it seems like he's having a great start to the year. But who in that lineup do you fear if you're a Mets fan?
Oh, you just said it, honestly. Right now, it has to be Carson Kelly, because he's literally been the best D-backs player since Ketel Marte went down. And I've made the case on here, as it currently stands, you know, we're like 25 games into the season, he should be an MVP candidate. The dude right now has a 1142 OPS, a 333 average. He's got six home runs, which is one off the team lead. And he's by far been the best and most productive player and most consistent player for the D-backs this season. He's been pretty good behind the plate as well. He's not an elite defensive catcher, but I think he's made real strides in that area. So offensively, there's no one I trust more on this D-backs team than Carson Kelly. He is the walking king right now, 476 OBP, more walks than strikeouts. So if I had to choose, it's definitely Carson Kelly, because right now, when I look back at that Paul Goldschmidt trade, we got Luke Weaver and Carson Kelly back in that deal. Luke Weaver, not feeling too good about him and where he's standing right now with the D-backs. But Carson Kelly, he's salvaging that deal, and right now he's definitely the centerpiece of that deal. So I like the way he looks, and he's definitely the best player that you should be afraid of in this lineup, because no Ketel Marte, Christian Walker's been struggling. Eduardo Escobar has been heating up. He still doesn't have a super high average, but the power's been there for him this season, because he already has more home runs than he had all of last year in 2020. Even though it's a small sample size, I mean, he already has seven home runs this year and he hit like two last year. So the dude has been picking it up a lot this season. But Ryan, thank you for hopping on. I know it's late out there in Florida. I know you're getting off work, so I appreciate you hopping on today's pod, my man.
Yeah, no problem. It was fun. That's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. And if you want to get more of the sports news you need in less time, check out our new Locked On Today podcast. Hosted by Peter Bukowski, Locked On Today is a daily show breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes by subscribing to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts.